Hello, everyone. This is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign is N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. I'll be reading for you today in digest form, World Radio Magazine for August 2008. World Radio is published by Armin Noble, call N6WR. The editor is Nancy Kott, that's K-O-T-T, call W-Z-H-C. If you'd like to be in contact with them, their offices are at 2120 28th Street, Sacramento, California, 95818. The phone number, 916-457-3655. This recording is a production of the Courage Handy Hemp System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handy Hemp members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. Handy Hems may be reached at area 763-520-0512 or at email address handyham@courage.org. We spell Handy Ham, H-A-N-D-I-H-A-M, one word, handyham@courage.org. Our website is www.handyham.org. Again, my name is Bob Zeta. My QTH, our geographic location, is Dartmouth, Massachusetts, near Buzzards Bay in good old Cape Cod. So let's begin World Radio in digest form for August 2008 on the Courage Handy Ham System. Let's begin with the editor's log. Did you have a good field day? In Michigan, we had our traditional rainstorm on Saturday evening. Participation seemed down this year, and there wasn't the contagious field day fever that brings out the amateurs you don't see all year. Most of the focus was on emergency communication promotion, which is good for the public to see. But the camaraderie and contesting fun is getting lost along the way. From my point of view, this all falls back on tradition. It appears that we are bending over backwards to be politically correct and assimilate ourselves with the newcomers. It used to be the other way around. The new amateurs were excited to be one of us, the licensed, the proud, the hams, to paraphrase a military slogan, and that included learning our tradition. I just had my 20th anniversary of getting my first amateur radio license, and remember when I first started learning about the slang terms that were used in amateur radio? For example, the term my business, or FB. How dumb is that? I thought. No one is going to really say that on the air. But when I made my first CW, Morse code, contact, and the operator came back to me with 599FB, copy, Nancy, I was thrilled. It was like I had been accepted into the fraternity using a special language. And every contact after that used fine business in the conversation. It didn't seem dumb anymore. It was ham speak. Same thing with the term LID, L-I-D, which, thankfully, no one used about me, at least not to my face. And the term Elmer, and old man. They may seem silly to outsiders and newcomers, but they are part of our language and culture. They have been around almost since the beginning of amateur radio. I read on the internet that the term Elmer was coined in the 1970s, but I find that hard to believe. Speaking of old-timers, including my father, W8ROG, they remember hearing it when they were licensed in the late 1930s and 1940s. I did find a reference to it on the web, dated 1947. Old-timers, do you remember hearing the term Elmer before 1970? Let me know. Our culture makes us who we are and gives us a sense of continuity and belonging. I would hate to see it disappear because we are trying so hard to attract a new crowd and we are afraid of being scoffed at. If they want to be part of our community, let them learn the language. We have already made the written tests easier, eliminated the code requirement, simplified the exam system. Let's not give up our verbal heritage, too. Get in touch with me, either by the webpage, www.wr6wr.com, or you can email me at Nancy, which is N-A-N-C-I, at T. www.ir.com. Let's go to some reasonably current and breaking news. World Radio Newsfront. Amateur radio news courtesy of the American Radio Relay League Letter and Newsline. Midwest storms. Amateur radio was among the first responders as severe weather battered the Midwestern United States starting on 04 June. From Indianapolis south to the Kentucky line, Indiana residents were surrounded by fast-rising floodwaters. Torrential rains from slow-moving storms dumped up to 11 inches of water on Hoosier communities across the southern part of Indiana. Dozens of amateur radio operators were activated in response to calls from various county emergency operating centers. Rising waters closed many county roads across the region. In Johnson County, just south of Indianapolis, amateur radio operators were asked to report closed roads and bridges damaged by fast-moving water. Eight bridges were severely damaged, and one dam was breached, forcing evacuations from a small lake community. By the weekend, most major highways and county roads were closed due to waist-high water. Water rescue units sent to evacuate neighborhoods had a hard time getting equipment to those in need. Hams in Columbus and Seymour, Indiana, provided communications to evacuate shelters. Several times they had to tear down and relocate as their shelters were closed and moved to higher ground. The rain just kept coming. By Monday, wary amateur radio operators were calling for relief as more shelters were opened and continued to operate. It was a busy month for Indiana ham radio operators. A week before the floods, many of the same areas were raked by devastating tornadoes. Again, amateur radio communications was put to the test while providing emergency communications to area shelters and emergency management agencies across the state. Rescue operations became so numerous that local fire departments, the Department of Natural Resources, and the Indiana National Guard were swamped with requests. The U.S. Coast Guard dispatched rescue helicopters from Chicago, while a contingency of U.S. Marines located at Camp Atterbury near Columbus, Indiana, postponed their training mission and began assisting with water rescues in Morgan County. The Marines are from Camp Lejeune in North Carolina. They also fell victim to the tornadoes and local flooding. The large Chinook helicopters flew search and rescue missions for several affected counties. According to the National Weather Service records, this is the worst flooding Indiana has seen since 1913, and it may not be over yet. All those floodwaters are now flowing downstream, causing new problems to southern Indiana communities. Switching our commentary to the California fire or fires, ham radio volunteers from Santa Cruz Ares provided a vital layer of communications to support firefighters, law enforcement, Red Cross, and animal control during the Martin fire in the hills above Santa Cruz over Father's Day weekend. As of Tuesday, 17 June, the fires, which covered more than 500 acres, was completely contained. Four people were injured in the fire. Three homes were destroyed and another one was damaged, while eight outbuildings burned down. Santa Cruz, home of the University of California, Santa Cruz, is a town of about 55,000 people located on the northern edge of Monterey Bay. During the blaze, AWRL Santa Cruz Valley Section Public Information Coordinator Bill Moffitt, call AE6GS, said the radios in the Santa Cruz County Emergency Operations Center were crackling with traffic as hams across the area transferred information, made requests, and made sure the various agencies, from the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection to the Santa Cruz County Sheriff's Department, were kept abreast of the progress in fighting the fire and the needs that arose in the area. Yet, Moffitt said, even with all this going on, Harris volunteers remained completely professional, ensuring the accuracy and effectiveness of the flow of traffic. Quoting, "Our group got some valuable practice during the Summit fire a few weeks ago," said ARRL Santa Cruz County District Emergency Coordinator Cap Pennell, called KE6AFA, who manned the radio room in the Santa Cruz EOC, that's Emergency Operating Center. "Our people were much more ready for this fire. and the quality of the response shows. The Summit fire burned more than 4,200 acres in both Santa Cruz and Santa Clara counties, destroying 31 homes and 63 outbuildings. Both the Martin and Summit fires remained under investigation. Helping to evacuate people in the fire's path was an immediate priority, and the ARES Ares teams facilitated communications between the various agencies who were notifying people about their evacuation status. But pets and livestock, including a multi-hundred-pound pig, also needed to be moved from harm's way. That's when Santa Cruz County Animal Control organized volunteers from Equine Evacuation, a local animal evacuation organization, to help transport animals out of the fire zone. Several hams were also members of that group, and with their help, Equine Evacuation safely and efficiently removed more than 50 animals, including horses and other livestock, to safe locations. "I slept about 4 hours last night," said Hap Bullard, KQ6YV, as he stood next to his ham radio equipped pickup hooked up to his empty horse trailer at the staging area for the animal evacuation. Bullard is a ham radio operator who also serves with Equine Evacuation. "I'm here to ensure the animal control people can stay in touch with the Emergency Operations Center, but I'll be going to pick up horses if I'm needed," he said. That was courtesy of ARRL. Let's go right to With the Handy Hams. Be prepared. The author here is Avery Finn. Call K0HLA. "We have had a terrible run of tornadoes, floods, and straight-line winds here in the middle of North America. That prompted me to write about being prepared when suddenly the lights went out. This last weekend was not a very good one for me in a couple of ways. What I am going to tell you about took place right in my apartment as I was just sitting there minding my own business. We had a thunderstorm go through at a very high rate of speed. It was a rather large cell. There was lots of lightning. This was about 9:30 or 10 p.m., Minneapolis time. I was just sitting there reading my mail when everything went dark. No warning, no noise, just darkness. I had heard on the news we might get a little weather, so I had made it a point to have a flashlight close by. After feeling around where I thought it would be, I finally found it. I made my way to a window and looked out. Sure enough, everything on this side of Main Street was dark. All the electrical power was out, so out came the candles and matches. Being very careful where I placed the candles, I lit them. Now I didn't have to worry about the batteries going out in the old-style flashlight I was using. I do have a couple of those new LED flashlights that draw very little from the batteries and last a very long time, but I wanted to save those for a backup in case the power stayed off for many hours. Many people who did not have any emergency lighting thought, I will just go down to my car and drive out of the underground garage using the radio and lights in my car. But they forgot one little thing. In our apartment building, no power means no elevator and no garage door opener. I know that it takes 4 or 5 very strong people to lift that door, as we had to do it one other time. There was no light in the garage either. The backup system was out too. So, most people just sat in their apartment in the dark. Since the winds had passed and there would be no more damage due to the storm, I turned on my AM-FM shortwave battery-operated radio and listened to my favorite FM station. I had plenty of light, so I finished reading the material I had started and with nothing much else to do, turned on both my HD-style battery-operated scanner and my battery-operated handheld radio. Gosh! I heard that about 8,000 people were without power in the area around my QTH. Many, as it finally turned out, were without power for 24 hours. That wasn't the case for me. About 11 p.m., I decided it was time to get some sleep, so I was about to put out the candles and turn off all the radios, when, what do you know, the power came back. At almost that same instant, I heard someone on one of the repeaters say, "The power is back." It was only out for about an hour and a half in my area. For me, that was not a very big deal, but for some, that was a very long time sitting there in the dark. Yes, this is a true story. It happened to me last weekend. The Boy Scouts say, be prepared, and it is a very good motto for ham radio operators as well. An emergency is no time to find out your batteries are not working. Have spares to go. Have other resources of communications like your ham rig working on some sort of emergency power. Have all your emergency supplies in the crab and goat container, so you have just one place to find everything. Had there been a serious emergency, I had the ability to get communications out. The ham HT, handy talkie, a cell phone if the cells were working, a wireless laptop battery-operated computer, and I could monitor many different frequencies with my AM-FM shortwave receiver and my scanner. Now let's finish up with a few words about the upcoming summer handy ham radio camp. Since this is the August issue, I might as well promote our radio camp station. Call us W0ZSW, Whiskey Zero, Zulu, Sierra Whiskey, which will be on the air between 20th to 27th of August, 2008. We will be operating from northern Minnesota, near the headwaters of the mighty Mississippi River. Some of the more experienced Handy Ham members will be helping those who are newly licensed or who simply don't have space for their HF antennas at their home QTHs. I hope you will look for us on the air and to give some of our radio campers who have disabilities the thrilling experience of getting on the HF bands. Of course, we would love to receive your QSL card and send you one in return. One thing I would ask of you when you contact our station is that you will help our new hams who don't have much HF experience to learn the ropes. In the excitement of getting on the air, newbies can make mistakes. Well, after all, it is amateur radio. There are some tips for making a contact go well. Point, allow plenty of time for the newbie to respond. Sometimes the new ham with a disability has to have someone else hold or pass the microphone. Lots of times we are grouped around the station, and more than one operator wants to say hello. Point, don't be afraid to ask for repeats if you don't understand what was said. Common mistakes that new operators often make are speaking too fast or forgetting their phonetics. Point, give good example by communicating clearly yourself, using phonetics when necessary, and exercising patience. All of these things seem pretty basic, but our new hams will need to know them when they encounter an emergency and are asked to help with communications. If the lights go out, let's be sure they are well prepared. So, till next time, 73 NDX from K0HLA, Avery. You can reach me at area 866-426-3442, toll free, or email me at lowercase avery.finn@courage, courage, .org. Again, the email is avery.finn@courage.org. You can visit our website to learn more about being a ham radio operator with a disability. And that's located at http://www.handyham.org. Let's move along now to Contest Corner. A preseason station tune-up. The author, Mark Stephen Williams, K9GX. With the 2008 contest season just around the corner, I thought putting together a station maintenance checklist would be a worthwhile exercise. The approaching fall and winter brings the majors, like the CQ Worldwide, November Sweepstakes, the ARRR L10 meter, and the 160-meter contest, and the January NAQPs. For those of us living outside the temperate climes of the southwestern or Gulf Coast states of North America, now is the time to take care of outdoor chores like maintenance and repair of antennas and grounding systems. If it's going to break or fail, count on the failure coming on a contest weekend or during a snowstorm. Now, we have to develop a plan. Before you start any project, I suggest you sit down, make a list, and prioritize it. I find it helpful to break out lists into new build-outs and maintenance. If you're like most radio amateurs, you probably have at least one or more antenna projects on your to-do list, and the shack accessory or other device that would make your time in the shack more enjoyable and efficient. Whatever the case, write everything down, and you'll probably find organizing your tasks much easier. I keep equipment manuals and maintenance records in the 3-ring binders in the shack. You'll find it helpful to have a reference available when problems arise. It's also handy to have a photographic record of your projects and equipment. Now, for organizing tools and parts. In order to effectively maintain your station and equipment, you need to have the necessary tools, parts, and supplies. An electronics toolkit and an adequate supply of electronic parts, connectors, hardware, adapters, and test gear will enable you to perform necessary maintenance tasks. I keep a supply of coax, connectors, copper strap, Kevlar rope, miscellaneous hardware, antenna wire, antenna insulators, interference filters, ferrite beads, etc. High-quality electrical tape, fuses, power connectors, and hookup wire available in my workshop. A good set of mechanical tools is also essential. My toolkit includes a socket set, a set of box slant open-end wrenches, punches, large sockets, more than 1 inch for tower work, hacksaws, tin snips, flat and rat-tail file, steel wool, and a selection of wire brushes. If there's a tower in your life, a good set of climbing gear is an absolute must. You can't work safely on a tower without the proper climbing gear. You'll need a hard hat, safety harness, fall arrest lanyards, climbing belts, gloves, and steel-soled work boots before you attempt that first climb up the tower. The K9GX tower maintenance manifest also includes a gin pole, guide tension scale, winches, come-alongs, that's ratcheting cable pullers, alignment awls, a propane torch for soldering copper strap, and a weighted fence post driver for pounding down ground rods. Maintaining a radio system also requires at least a basic complement of test equipment. You want to have a VOM, that's a volt ohm meter, a calibrated radio frequency, RF watt meter, and an antenna system analyzer. Let's take a look at construction projects material. Most antenna projects will involve a wire antenna of some type. Whether you're planning to install a dipole, loop, or low-band inverted L, use a quality copper welt wire and high-quality antenna insulators. Stranded wire will stretch over time and retune your antenna. For wire antenna support lines, I use polyester slant Kevlar core support line. Kevlar is very strong and durable and doesn't stretch. Use quality coaxial cable or ladder line. Bargain or use coax is not much of a deal. If you lose 6 dB per 100 feet at HF wavelengths, never mind VHF or UHF. If you can afford it, purchase RG213 or LMR400 coaxial cable. I buy coax in 500-foot lengths. There's usually a significant price break in larger quantities, and if the cost is too much for you, split it with a friend. Always use silver Teflon UHF or N-type connectors and solder them. If you're using trees as supports, you'll need an efficient method for launching support lines into the trees. There are special considerations for hanging wire antennas in trees. Antenna support lines in trees can be frayed over time or bound in the tree's bark. Whatever method you use to support your wire antennas, anchoring them can be challenging. I use steel fence posts. They can be placed anywhere, are simple to install, can be moved fairly easily, and have great hooks which make easy work for tensioning and anchoring wire antenna lines. Consider adding an antenna for a band you're not currently on, or an antenna positioned at right angles to an existing antenna. Now for maintenance projects. Twice a year, spring and fall, inspect all of your antenna systems. Check for loose or damaged connectors, frayed support lines, antenna wires, and rotator control cables. Inspect all cable runs for signs of damage and look carefully for critter damage on cables that lay outdoors between the shack and antenna system. Rodents thinks coax is tasty. Lower and inspect wire antennas. Check for cracked or damaged insulators. Examine the feed point connector for signs of oxidation, corrosion, or moisture incursion. If you have a tower, start with a ground level inspection. Check that all hardware is secure and look for rust or corrosion. Inspect a guy anchor system. Again, looking for loose or damaged hardware. Once a year, I check guy tension using the tension gauge. I also clean up the area around the guy anchors and tower base twice a year. If necessary, trim out grasses and weeds carefully with a weed eater. I spray vegetation killer over 40 square foot area around each anchor point and at the base. If you're equipped to do so, climb the tower and inspect each section, the guy points, cable runs, and rotator system. At my station, K9GX, the rotator to mast clamp is loose, so I've got to do some maintenance at the 85-foot level before the winter weather arrives. Always have an assistant on the ground while climbing and make sure everyone wears a hard hat. Now, you have to be well grounded. Proper grounding is possibly the most important technical improvement that can be made in a radio installation. If you haven't already done so, make sure your station has an effective ground system. A good ground system will help mitigate damage from lightning strikes and keep your signal clean and free from stray RF. Information on good grounding techniques is available from a variety of sources, including the ARRL handbook. I won't get into an in-depth discussion of grounding here, except to recommend that you pay special attention to this aspect of your station design. I'm aware of one prominent contestant who installed ground rods in the floor of his basement shack during construction of his home. A grounded bulkhead entry panel with a surge protector for each coax and rotator cable is a very worthwhile investment. Once you are satisfied that you have an adequate ground system at your station, be sure to make an inspection of the system part of your maintenance program. Look for signs of deterioration, corrosion, and damage in the ground system, just as you would with elements of the antenna systems. Now, tune in, turn on. Test every antenna across each frequency band, checking forward and reflected power using your wattmeter and antenna analyzer. I sweep each band using my MFJ antenna analyzer before firing up the radios to test at rated power levels. If you have an amplifier included in your performance checkout, I usually tune up each band and check power and standing wave ratio, SWR, every 25 or 50 kilohertz, taking notes along the way. Always check that the frequency is clear before tuning up. You may not be using your 75-meter inverted V much during the summer months, but the night before a major contest weekend with 6 inches of snow on the ground is not the time to find out the SWR is 10 to 1 across the entire band on any of your antennas. Test them now. Now for shack time. This is a great time to consider any station upgrades in the shack. If you're a phone operator, a DVK or digital voice keyer can save a lot of wear and tear on the old vocal cords during contests. Rather than shouting CQ contest incessantly for 10, 12, 24, or 48 hours, a digital voice keyer, DVK, makes calling as simple as the push of a button. If you prefer CW or Morse code, most modern radios have programmable CW memories. A number of external CW keyers are also available. Either way, you should be able to set your station up so that during contests, all you have to send manually is the other station's call sign. A foot switch and microphone boom set will greatly enhance your operating enjoyment and efficiency. I can't imagine trying to log QSO's contacts, that is, while holding a mic with one hand and pressing to push to talk with the other. Have you computerized your shack? Logging your QSO's on a computer makes submitting contest entries and QSLing very straightforward. Computer control of radios, antenna switches, and other accessories streamlines contest operating and minimizes mistakes. You don't need a high-end supercomputer for your shack. For years, my radio room computer was a 200 megahertz machine I bought at a ham fest for $18, and my current shack computer is a retired surplus machine from my workplace. Review the layout and ergonomics of your operating desk. Ergonomics is just a fancy word for comfortable to use. Does the height of your desk fit your body? Generally, the work surface should be between 29 and 31 inches above the floor. The desk in my shack is radio station studio furniture, which was dumpster-bound. Some hams use computer workstation desks, and I've seen one that's an old kitchen table. Tilt the front panels on your radios up so the knobs and displays are easy to use and accessible. I place pieces of plywood under the front feet of my radios. This minimizes stress to the hands, wrists, neck, and spine. Add a shelf for accessories like rotator controls, antenna switches, and watt meters. Use bricks or wooden blocks to customize the height above the desk surface and do a reach test for each accessory. Finally, make sure you have a quality chair at your operating position. You'll enjoy your operating time and stay sharper and more alert if you're sitting comfortably in a well-designed chair. As a matter of fact, I have three chairs in the shack and rotate them often during contest weekends. That's it for this month's Contest Corner. Let me hear from you with your tips for maintaining your station, questions, comments, or suggestions for topics for future columns. You can send your comments to k9gxwr@yahoo.com. If you want to mail it, it's Post Office Box 5973, Elizabeth, woman's name, Elizabeth, Indiana, IN, 47117. We'll change pace now and go to Rules and Regulations. Title here is Drill Plan. The author, John B. Johnston, called W3BE, Whiskey 3, Bravo Echo. It's a series of questions with answers and commentary by John. Question. We are planning a military-civilian full-scale preparedness drill. About 70 to 80 agencies, 5,000 or so people, will come together to do a bioterrorist attack scenario. I have been appointed to call up an amateur radio backup net. What is the possibility of the FCC issuing an emergency communications declaration? The answer, unlikely. There is no provision in Part 97 authorizing an FCC office to issue an emergency communication declaration in the event of a real disaster, let alone a drill. You probably have in mind a form of rule that allowed a request for a declaration of a temporary state of emergency to be directed to the engineer in charge of the FCC field office in the area concerned when a disaster had occurred that disrupted normal communication systems. When granted, it overrode, for a short period of time, Section 97.101 sub B, which stipulated, one, that no frequency will be assigned for the exclusive use of any station, and two, each station licensee and each control operator must cooperate in selecting transmitting channels and in making the most effective use of the amateur service frequencies. Even when granted, that declaration applied only in places where the FCC regulates our amateur service. That now deleted rule was apparently redundant with the still codified section 97.101 sub C. At all times and on all frequencies, Each control operator must give priority to stations providing emergency communications, except to stations transmitting communications for training drills and tests in races. It works. Riley reports that the FCC did not receive any requests for a declaration during Katrina. Now, the commentary from the author, W3BE O. Graham. Your approval for the exclusive use of certain channels must come from the amateur operators otherwise entitled to them. Our repeater system channeling arrangements, for example, is based upon such a near unanimous concession. Question. If a declaration is not an option, what can we simulate in our large-scale federal military local emergency drill? The answer. Simulate as you find necessary, keeping in mind that your network will be comprised of amateur stations and their control operators utilizing our amateur service spectrum authorized under Part 97 for our purpose. Our service is for the purpose of self-training, intercommunication, and technical investigations carried out by amateurs, that is, duly authorized persons interested in radio techniques solely with the personal gain and without pecuniary interest. That references Part 97.3, sub A, sub 4. When in doubt about the propriety of transmitting any questionable communications, consults B.E., Informed Number 3, Section 97.113, smell test. That's what I said, smell test. Your station should never be used for any communication unless no can be answered truthfully and completely for each and every one of the 11 pointed questions. Although probably perceived widely as but a mere hobby, our amateur service is in fact a legitimate radio service recognized domestically and internationally, and for which some highly valued public spectrum resources are allocated. The federal and military emergency service agencies, on the other hand, will be communicating on government spectrum allowed specifically for their purposes, and the local government emergency service providers will be communicating on the private land mobile radio service spectrum authorized for their purposes under FCC Part 90. The rules in Part 97 are designed to provide an amateur radio service in places where it is regulated by the FCC, having a fundamental purpose as expressed in five principles, the first of which is recognition and enhancement of the value of the amateur service to the public as a voluntary, non-commercial communication service, particularly with respect to providing emergency communications. Now here's a commentary by W3BE with the O. Graham. Our amateur service seems to best provide the public with emergency communications through our ad hoc networks using our unique array of abilities, know-how capabilities, situational adaptability, technical flexibility, operator availability, et al. They exist because of the relatively unstructured nature of our communications and our hands-on familiarity with the underlying technology. No other radio service comes close to our amateur service in these abilities. Most certainly we should contribute our abilities whenever normal communication systems are inadequate to meet the public's need for emergency communications in the wake of a disaster. But we should be careful not to be misperceived as proving the notion that government spectrum managers have erred by allocating far too much of our amateur service at the expense of the government public emergency service providers. While the public appreciates the work of our police, fire persons, emergency medical technicians, etc., not nearly as many people are as convinced that our amateur service is similarly worthwhile. Don't let your actions bolster the spectrum shark's arguments. Also bothersome is the fact that we must disrupt the communications ongoing in our amateur service by superimposing on it communications in support of federal agencies that have access to their own government spectrum. Rather than overload our allocation with government communications, The WISO model to follow is that employed by the military affiliate radio system, MARS, wherein over 5,000 amateur operators use their apparatus for transmitting on government channels. Here's another question. We operate our club station at the National Weather Service office for Skywarn. We have both HF and VHF capability. I am the trustee of the station, but I want to be relieved of this responsibility. Our team chairman has a technician class license and is willing to be the trustee. My question is, if the club station trustee is a technician, can general class licensees operate the station in the HF bands using the club call sign? The answer, yes. If the transmissions take place on spectrum available to a station having a control operator holding a general class operator license grant. Commentary from W3BE. Here is another federal government agency eligible for access to its own government spectrum, encroaching onto our amateur service spectrum. Well, let's pop one more question. Our county races, RACES, will be participating in a statewide drill that will exceed the 1 hour per week rule. It is my understanding that we can exceed 1 hour two times per year, up to 72 hours each time. Please clarify just whose permission is needed in order to exceed 1 hour. The answer? That depends upon how civil defense is organized in your area. Section 97.407 sub E says that all communications transmitted in races must be specifically authorized by the civil defense organization for the area served. Only civil defense communications of certain types may be transmitted, including, four, that for races, training drills and tests necessary to ensure the establishment and maintenance of orderly and efficient operation of the races as ordered by the responsible civil defense organization served. Such drills and tests may not exceed a total time of 1 hour per week. With the approval of the Chief Officer for Emergency Planning in the applicable state, commonwealth, district, or territory, however, such tests and drills may be conducted for a period not to exceed 72 hours, no more than twice in any calendar year. In that your county races will be participating in the statewide drill, the area served appears to be the state, and the responsible civil defense organization for the area served would be the state agency. The rule allows only the chief officer for emergency planning in the state to approve drills and tests in excess of 1 hour per week. The rule does not allow a local jurisdiction's emergency manager to approve drills and tests that exceed 1 hour per week. Note that in other paragraphs of the rule, the phrase, quoting here, or the civil defense organization, close quote, is used. This is broader than state, commonwealth, district, or territory, in that it includes local or national civil defense organizations, thereby comporting with the definition of races in section 97.3, sub A, sub 37. A radio service using amateur stations for civil defense communications during periods of local, regional, or national civil emergencies. Commentary by W3EE through the OGRAM. Keep in mind that such races, training drills, and tests are not entitled to exclusive use of any spectrum. The participating stations have to share with our amateur stations the spectrum allocated to our amateur service. If you, the listener, have any further comments or suggestions, you can contact the author, lowercase, J-O-H-N, at johnston.net. So that is, email to john at johnston.net. Well, for you folks that may be traveling around this latter part of the summer of 2008. Here on page 50 of World Radio for August 2008 are a list of ham fests. I'll read them rather quickly. So if a particular location, in this case, I think they're all states mentioned, piques your interest, just make a note of it for the date and the club that's sponsoring the Hamfest. For you people that don't know Hamspeak, that's a ham flea market. To let you get some cooler mountain fresh air high up there, the Denver Radio Club will be holding theirs on the 17th of August at the Jefferson County Fairgrounds, Golden, Colorado. Oh, you can go visit the Golden, Colorado Brewery, I think they call it Coors, to have a libation or two before you hit the club. In Indiana, the Owen, Monroe County Amateur Radio Ham Fest, sponsored by Owen County Amateur Radio Association and the Bloomington Amateur Club, will be held 23 August at the Owen County Fairgrounds in Spencer, Indiana. Now in New Mexico, Duke City Ham Fest, sponsored by New Mexico Hamventions Incorporated, the 15th to 16th of August. That'll be held at the Sandia Baptist Church, 9429 Constitution Avenue, Northeast, Albuquerque, New Mexico. Now, I skip a few as I go along, folks. If you were to be looking at that page, that's because their date is so close to the beginning of August, you will not have received this recorded version of World Red, a courtesy of the Courage Handy Hymn System, before they occur. So let's see. Now, here's one. Joplin Amateur Radio Club, which is in Missouri, 22nd, 23rd of August, at the Hammonds, John Q. Hammonds Convention Center, Joplin, Missouri. Now in the wet and soggy state of Ohio, the Cambridge Amateur Radio Association and Computer Show will be held on 24 August at the Pritchard Laughlin Civic Center, Cambridge, Ohio. Well, it looks like about all that I think you can possibly catch on to if you read this somewhere after about the 10th of August. So, enjoy it. That's one way to find a lot of cheap stuff that still works without paying the big bucks to other people. Hi. I think I'll sort of wind up with a nice human interest piece. Hams assist in search for a missing toddler. A two-year-old boy who had wandered into a cornfield and had been reported missing around 10 p.m. Thursday, 26 June, was found asleep in the cornfield shortly after 9 a.m. Friday morning by Rick Russell, KG4BFG, of Powell, Tennessee. Rick, along with several other amateur operators, Jefferson County Sheriff deputies and rescue squad, as well as the Knox County Sheriff's Department and Air Watch, helped with search efforts for 2-year-old Cody Humbart of Jefferson County, Tennessee, just off Silver Lane. The search lasted all night, according to reports. The boy's grandmother told the police the family searched for the child for about half an hour before calling 911 to get assistance. There was great concern for the child's safety because of the many ponds in the area. Requests for additional help by John Wilson, KI4YGZ, was transmitted over the 145.470 repeater, owned by Tim Berry, B-E-R-R-Y, Tim's call WB4GBI. Over 100 people were involved in the search. Thanks to all who participated in the search, from the 470 Amateur Radio Rat Pack group, and also from Tim Berry, WB4GBI. That was submitted by Richard Sawaya and for JDQ. Folks, that just about brings me to a conclusion for the digest format reading of World Radio 2008, published by World Radio Incorporated at 2120 28th Street, Sacramento, California, 95818. This recording is a production of the Courage Hand Hymn System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handy Ham members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. Handy Hams may be reached at area 763-520-0512 or at email address handyham@courage.org. And there is a website at http://www.handyham.org. My name is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign is N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. My QTH, or geographic location, is Dartmouth, Massachusetts, right near New Bedford, the fishing capital of the world, and good old Buzzards Bay near Cape Cod. Hope you're having a great summer. Thanks a lot for listening and for participating with the Courage Handy Hemp System.